Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. Today is Wednesday, April 20th. It's 10 o'clock, and I call this commission meeting to order. We have some interesting things on the agenda, but before we get to those, I wanted to offer a couple opening comments. Both of them in the lines of safety. End of last week, I spoke at an Operation Operation Lifesaver event. This is an organization that exists nationwide. The goal of this group is to reduce fatalities caused by cars hitting trains. And so I'm using my C-Trax Think Trains pen, and I have my C-Trax Think Train air freshener here to keep Randy and Brian smelling nice. I'll take it to my car. And I just wanted to offer some statistics that I thought was interesting from that meeting and add my voice to those who encourage folks to be safe around railroad tracks. So every 3 hours, a person is struck by a vehicle is struck by a train in our country. And this number has come down dramatically over the last 30 years. But we still have room for improvement, even here in North Dakota. Getting hit by a car getting hit by a train is like a car running over an aluminum can. That's equivalent. That's how low your chances are of surviving that kind of an accident. The trains just, it's no contest. The trains always, always win. And what's interesting about this and sad is that nationally, over 50% of the accidents occur on locations where there are safety devices in play, gates and lights often. The most accidents occur where there are gates. And so people are just taking unnecessary risks in trying to, you know, speed up their days. One of the things we hear a lot about in North Dakota are complaints about the whistles on the trains, especially on private crossings. Daryl can attest to some of the complaints we get from folks who think that the engineers are being excessive in the use of horns, and maybe in some cases they are, but the fact remains nationally at private crossings, last year there was 268 collisions at a private crossing. So while that isn't a huge problem in North Dakota, we didn't have any of those collisions last year. At private crossings, the trains are required to blow the whistles for that reason, because this is a problem nationally, and often the private crossings have fewer other safety devices. So I wanted to call that to everyone's attention, and then just highlight what happened in North Dakota last year. This is something that is tracked by the FRA. This is not something that we get involved in. It's not something that our safety inspectors are real involved in, although they do hear the complaints on the noise and the whistles and work with the railroads on all the safety issues. But last year in North Dakota, there were 15 of these collisions and 3 fatalities. And so we've seen that number go down with the decrease in overall traffic in the West, so that's a good thing. But over a 5-year period from 2010 to 2015 in North Dakota, the areas where we saw the biggest problems were Williams, Montreal, and Ward and Cass counties. So you can see right in the heart of where we were seeing a lot of increased traffic on the rails and a lot of increased traffic on our road systems because of the oil industry. So we're doing fairly well in North Dakota, but we had a tragedy last year. 3 people killed. 2 of them were as a result of that bus accident in Grand Forks County by Larimore. And so we just want to constantly be reminding people that you don't want to be going around the barriers. Wait for the trains. Listen for the trains. Look for the trains. And do not think you can outrun the trains. The other issue is trespassing on railroad property, which is another big challenge, and that's growing nationally. And people, you know, there's some pretty tragic experiences out there of people tripping and falling or getting their arms caught on a train that was stalled, and then the train starts. And, there's just a lot of bad things that happen. So encourage the media to get the information out there again, that people should be staying clear of the railroads. They don't have much chance of coming out on top in a tussle with the railroad system. that's the first thing. The second thing is this is Call Before You Dig Month, and I expect my colleagues will also have some things to say on this issue, and we've got a news release ready to come out as well. But Call Before You Dig, we have a couple cases on our agenda this morning for people who didn't call before they began digging, and they're going to be fined as a result. And I think that we're looking at other additional ways that we can get the word out to contractors, especially those contractors who are not part of the Associated General Contractors organization that does a lot of great work, or they're not getting the messages through regular means that this, what our laws are, what the requirements are, and what the penalties are, and so that they're aware that we are serious about enforcing this law. It's a huge danger to the workers in particular who are out there digging in areas where they have no idea what's underneath them, and they could easily strike a gas line or electric line or something that could be tragic to their health and welfare. And so we want the companies to be calling before they dig and waiting for the marks to be made, and so that they can have their personnel working safely and digging safely, and we don't have unnecessarily damaged infrastructure and outages. So I'll throw my voice to that cause on Call Before You Dig, and I'm sure Commissioner Kalk will have additional thoughts to add on that. So that concludes my opening comments. Commissioner Christman.
Well, very good safety points, and I'll leave the Safe Digging Month, the rest of the discussion about that up to Brian, since he's led the charge on that for a number of years already. The one thing I want to point out in opening comments is that the Lignite Energy Council is meeting starting this morning for the next couple days here in Bismarck, and it's not only the mining companies that are part of that, but also the generation companies and contractors and such. And this year, of course, a good part of the discussion will be about the Clean Power Plan and how to respond to it or respond in the meantime with the uncertainty that has caused. Also are a lot of other discussions that they have down there, including reclamation activities and things. And, of course, that is certainly in our wheelhouse, but also we've been very active in fighting the Clean Power Plan as well. So I know I'm certainly intending to spend some time, as well I'm sure as both of you intend to. But I think it should be some very interesting and enlightening hours that we are able to spend down there.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just extend Randy's comments about the Lignite Energy Council annual meeting. One of the things that all three of us are involved in NARUC a little bit, but I'm also the chair of the National Clean Coal Group. And one of the things that the Lignite Energy Council has really helped me in my position is we've been able to highlight some of the things that are going on in North Dakota. We've had GRE come out several times to our national meetings with their dry finding. We've had BNI Coal come out, as well as North American on their new alum cycle. And so as all this consternation about the Clean Power Plan shakes itself out, there's a commitment around the country to still go after these new technologies that capture the CO2 for other types of beneficial uses, no matter what happens in the CPP. So the Lignite Energy Council is doing good work in North Dakota, but they're also helping the national discussion. So actually, when we host Mark here this summer, we're going to have one of the undersecretaries from Department of Energy, Secretary Moeller, is going to be here and talk about what DOE is doing on the Clean Coal Plan, carbon management, and he's going to spend some time touring some of the facilities in North Dakota. So it's good discussion about coal going on in the country. It's all not all gloom and doom. There's a lot of good things going on out there. Next week I'm going to Southwest Power Pool for the more power line discussion. So, Dave, the year of the power line continues. And finally, last but not least, I'll talk about safe digging when we get to the orders. But, Commissioner Fedorchuk, I'm sure you're very excited about University of North Dakota winning their eighth national championship in
Division
hockey.
Division one national championship.
So Randy and I were both cheering for them quite profusely. And so I suspect that perhaps Randy and I helped them get over the top on this one. So.
You might have. And Beth, she's quite a fan.
I do have some other
T-shirt.
Some other statistics. Not only did the University of North Dakota win the Division One hockey championship, seldom known, but it did happen. The Dakota College at Botna won their ninth junior college hockey championship. So with it, I don't know if that's ever happened before. We've got the state have the junior college national championship hockey team as well as the big time winning it. So that's interesting. And then, of course, you talked about the Bison. We have only won five in a row Division I championships. But, Randy, how many national championships have the Bison won total? I always forget that number.
Well, I know it's got to be More than a dozen. I would say probably 13.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. So anyway.
Division one is what we're counting.
I understand. So I look forward to the continued discussion. And yes, it is Kalk Before You Dig, Mom.
Yes. And we got our picture taken this week with
that's
the governor.
Right.
It's officially proclaimed. Okay.
One more thing. You remind me of a good point. I hadn't looked that far in thinking that the next meeting of our group is not until into May. And so the day before that, on May 3rd, Undersecretary Janice Schneider will be here, and we'll be taking a tour up to coal country, and this is going to be on the subject of the stream protection rule, which is a rule that they have come out with and at the federal level, and it appears to be primarily a response to things that are going in the Appalachia region. And the rules that they have come out with would terribly, adversely impact North Dakota lignite mining. It would just be devastating if some changes to this don't occur. And so we're glad that she's going to come out here and get some more information and take a good look at this and give more consideration to having rules that are adopted with the Appalachia region in mind, applying to North Dakota coal mining.
Just to add to that, Randy's going to be participating in that tour and giving his good perspectives, both as a longtime legislator in that region, a resident in coal country, and now on the Public Service Commission. And she's coming here at the strong insistence of Senator John Hoeven, who had her in a hearing and said, you really ought to take a look at how these rules are applying in other areas and how the mining operations are done in other areas, and you might need to, you know, be open to tweaking these rules so that they apply to areas and are relevant and not just essentially make it almost impossible to mine in North Dakota with the rules that they're proposing. So we hope she comes with an open mind and open ears and listens to the hardworking folks in our coal industry who are doing things right in North Dakota and have for many years and have a long history of really solid mining and reclamation and environmental protection. So we're looking forward to that visit, and I'm glad that Randy's able to spend the time with her. Okay, so we have a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Darrell. Moving on to the regular agenda, I have just one item, but it's a pretty extensive one, and it came in at the last minute here, so we'll have to bear with me and others as we pull this all together. But I move the commission issue a notice of filings and opportunity for hearing in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project Siting Application, case number PU-14-842.
Second.
So on April 11th, Dakota Access filed an application to amend the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility number 179 and Route Permit number 191. That we issued in January. This is for the 358 miles of crude oil pipeline running through Montrail, Williams, McKenzie, Dunn, Mercer, Morton, and Emmons counties, and the associated terminals for those for that pipeline. The application has 53 route adjustments. I'm not going to read the legal description of all of those. And we looked really closely at this application because the legislature has spent a fair amount of time with us and with industry coming up with the plans for this very situation, route adjustments after the permit's been provided but before construction or during construction. And unfortunately, for Dakota Access on this case, these route adjustments were all longer than the 1.5 miles that was provided for under the reprint law that the legislature approved that would have provided a more consolidated approval process. If they had been shorter, then the process just would have required them to file all the information about what the adjustments are, that there's no avoidance and exclusionaries impacted, that they have all the landowners on board with these changes, and just to notify us, even if they go outside the approved corridor, which all of these do. In this case, these adjustments are longer than the 1.5 miles, so we don't have a truncated process available for approving these route changes. The law does require that you demonstrate a demonstrable emergency to do away with any of the notice procedures in the law and just allow us to approve these without any public notice. And so in that case, there really has been no emergency in terms of the legal standing of what the law requires that would jeopardize the utility system, and this in is what the law says. And so this motion provides for the standard 20-day notice of opportunity for hearing. Folks who have any issues with this must let us know by May 19th, and then we can determine this matter without a hearing. I do appreciate that these do not affect any of avoidance areas or exclusion areas. They have the easements. I have a stack of easements this big in my office proving that they have all the easements from the landowners supporting these changes. And in every single case, the changes are required, according to the companies, what they filed with us, by either landowner request, avoiding the request from the State Historical Preservation Officer, so cultural avoidance requirement, or an environmental protection issue. So this is the right thing the company is doing. We appreciate that. They do already have a permit for construction that allows them to construct. And so we are going to, we got the information yesterday, got it on the agenda today. We're getting the notice out as soon as we can because I know the company is eager to get this, these route changes approved and finalized. And so we're doing things as expeditiously on our end as we can under the law. And I don't expect any opposition from the public, but the fact remains these changes are longer than what the legislature felt was appropriate for a truncated process. There might be people out there, be it, the public entities or other neighboring landowners who might have interest. And in that case, they deserve an opportunity to let us know that. So with that, I just hope that my colleagues will support today's motion.
Yeah, we have a motion, a second, a further discussion.
I just want to point out I will be abstaining.
That's right. Remember that. My colleague.
Oh, I intend to support it, but I wonder if it's abstaining or that it's, I don't know what the right term is. It probably not, you've already recused yourself from this case, so I don't even know if it's an abstaining.
Well, I'm just pointing it out so that
he's not
it doesn't,
he's not voting.
On a voice vote, it would probably sound unanimous. Yeah.
Got it.
Is there any further discussion? I will proceed with the roll call vote then on this. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Aye.
Commissioner Kalk?
Aye.
Motion has been approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
Okay, RC1, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-16-163, granting the request of the Arthur Companies Incorporated to operate a 1,972,000 bushel grain warehouse at Pillsbury, North Dakota.
Second.
The Arthur Companies filed this application to operate the new warehouse, which is currently under construction at Pillsbury, North Dakota. This 110-car facility will be able to load grain at a rate of 80,000 bushels per hour. The target date for completion is May 1st, so they're just about done. The company operates grain warehouses in Animoose, Arthur, Ayer, Buffalo, Harvey, and Page. And with the addition of Pillsbury, we'll have a licensed capacity of 16,948,000 bushels. They have a $2 million bond on file with the commission and have not transacted business at the warehouse at the Pillsbury location. So statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Randy, do you happen to know if this is the largest group of warehouses, grain warehouses?
No, I would imagine like CHS and there might be others bigger, I believe. But there's certainly a huge player in North Dakota.
Yeah.
Is there any further discussion?
I will point out, I know there might be some thinking that Pillsbury is where the Pillsbury Corporation is, but it's not. And one of the reasons why they're not there is because there are only 12 inhabitants at Pillsbury, North Dakota. But Pillsbury is in Barnes County, straight north of Arisca. And they made national headlines almost 8 years ago, international headlines, when they had their June 10th city election and they had candidates on the ballot and no one showed up to vote.
Not even the candidates.
Not one single voter. And so in consultation with the auditors and such, it was determined that the people in office were able to appoint people to the then open seats until the following election. So they were able to handle it without any voters showing up. Democracy in action.
I guess.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the Commission submit the 2017 Administration and Enforcement Grant Application to the Office of Surface Mining, Reclamation, and Enforcement to request federal funds that are needed to carry out the coal regulatory program for the next one-year grant period that begins July 1st of 2016 and ends June 30th of 2017.
Second.
In February, the OSM announced the allocation of federal funds for the federal share of state coal regulatory programs for the next grant period. We were allocated enough federal funds for the next fiscal year that runs from July 1st through next June 30th. The 2017 Administration Enforcement Grant application for the coal regulatory program has been prepared and is ready to submit to the OSM. The total amount of the grant application, including the state share, is $1,512,000, just a hair over that. This includes both direct and indirect costs of this total. The federal share is almost $968,000, and the state share is a little over $544,000. The federal-state funding split will be 64% federal and 36% state, and that's based on OSM's federal lands funding formula, and that formula considers the federal coal acreage in existing permits and the applications that will permit additional acreage.
Here you have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just throw out there, just thank Jim and his staff. They just keep plugging away up there, doing great work and everything, and I would extend it to the whole staff, because this meeting today, we had a lot of stuff going on yesterday. We were up at a hearing most of the day, and just thanks to everybody in the staff, because you guys continue to get everything done in the time for us to do what we're supposed to do. And it, you know, everybody talks about it slowing down out there. It's not slowing down around this place at all. So just thanks to all the, I see, you know, Jerry and Julie and Sue and all, Stacy, you guys, Lana, and you guys are busting your, getting all this stuff done. So thanks, because there's a lot of work behind all this stuff that we get.
Another thing that, you know, is I think too often forgotten. This is one of the things that this agency and our team, working in conjunction with the mining companies, are doing that will last indefinitely. You know, this doesn't fix a rate for a year or two, or, you know, fix an issue with something that is short term. Restoring this land to the best possible condition after it's mined is something that will provide benefits for many generations to come, so it's important work.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Randy. All right, Commissioner Culk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If it's okay with you and Randy, what I'd like to do is move BK3 to the bottom of my motions. The other five are all some type of enforcement action, so we can go through all those and then finish up with the Brady Wind, too.
Sure.
That's all right. Okay.
All right.
I'll kind of just throw out a little, you know, there's five different consent orders that I'll be walking through in detail that range anywhere from a $500 fine all the way up to a $2,900 fine, and I'll go through all of them, I guess, at the end. But I just wanted to lay out there. The first couple are for failure to call before you dig. The other ones are for not digging safely, and then I'll go through the details. But the staff continues to work hard, I think, on following our guidance where if they don't have enough information, they dismiss it. If they do, they find the prima facie, or we find the prima facie, and they serve, and then either folks request a hearing or they get a consent order worked out. So I think it's been fruitful, the discussion we had with staff here a while ago based on some of the feedback we continue to get. And as we pointed out, it is Safe Digging Month, and there's, you know, the continued education continues up in Minot. This last week, the Common Ground Alliance was there, as well as North Dakota OneCall. They had 2 days of meetings and training, and I think, Commissioner Fedorchuk, you gave the opening comments up there, I think. And so I know that folks
last
out
week.
Yeah, last week. Folks out there are really working hard to educate, but there's always those bad actors that find themselves in front of us. So with that, item BK1, I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Greenway Earthworks LLC damage prevention enforcement case number PU15217.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In May of last year, we received a North Dakota OneCall complaint from Hess Corporation alleging a violation by Greenway Earthworks of North Dakota Century Call, basically failing to call before you dig. Based on the investigation, staff filed a formal complaint. Little background, Greenway is a company located in Kildare, North Dakota, and we're all, of course, aware of Hess. The specifics of this case, on May 20th, Greenway provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call system for work to begin on May 20th. The ticket was good through till June 10th. But based on the investigation, staff concluded that on May 20th, Greenway personnel began an excavation in the area of Highway 23 and Highway 73 in McKenzie County. In this case, it clearly was shown that they called the ticket in after they'd already started the digging. Hess saw this, and so it's almost unthinkable, but it's still happening out there. So when this was all worked itself through, staff certainly determined there was no agreement. It was not being made a time of emergency. They failed to provide the evacuation notice in the 48 hours required. In this case, it's Greenway's first violation. There was no damages, fortunately, but if there would have been with Hess's lines, there's potential there. But following our planning mode there, this is a Greenway will pay a $500 fine to the North Dakota. Well, it's payable to the Public Service Commission, but, of course, it goes to the general fund. So in this case, I do appreciate Hess's awareness and vigilance over their line. We'll continue to follow up with Greenway and encourage them to get to the right training. But in this case, everything is in order, and I appreciate Victor bringing this to closure.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2, I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Precision Dirtworks LLC Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU15750.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In November of last year, the commission received a North Dakota OneCall complaint from Xcel Energy alleging that a violation by Precision Dirtworks of the North Dakota Century Code, basically not calling before you dig. Precision is a North Dakota corporation with offices in West Fargo. Xcel, of course, is one of the companies that we regulate that does business in our larger cities in North Dakota. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that on July 23rd, Precision provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call for work to begin on July 27th, for located in the area of 721 First Street North, Fargo, North Dakota. Also based on investigation, staff concluded that on July 23rd, Precision personnel started an excavation in that exact area. So basically, they started the excavation before they even called it in. And, you know, in the facts of this case, that the one of Xcel's lines was damaged. A 2-inch natural gas line was damaged at the approximate cost of $3,278. So, you know, it appears that they started digging, hit something, and then called it in. So, of course, that's the violation of the law. The no agreement was made, not in time of emergency. Based on this case, staff has recommended the consent order says a $1,600 fine, of which $800 is waived in this case, as long as they do not have any other violations. They have paid for the damages. This is the only case today where there is a suspension, if you will, for 5 years. The rest of them are all fines. Continue to talk with staff about making sure that as we go through this, that there's, if we're going to, you know, recommend the fine. If we're going to suspend part of it, it's for reason. In this case, I think it made good sense because it was the first-time violation. There was damages. They have been reimbursed, so I think it makes sense in this case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
This is one of those where they're registered with the Secretary of State, and they so we could potentially fine them, and we can compare. What we're talking about doing is comparing those folks who are registered with the Secretary of State with those who have never used the one-call system. So we can see who's used the one-call system, take them out of the database because they're already obviously participating, and then reach out to those people who remain who are probably either not aware of it or don't realize what the risks are for not following the law, and reach out and try to focus our education materials on that audience. And this is one of those folks that maybe we could catch this in the previous one. So,
absolutely.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. We moved item BK3 to the end. Casey wants to stick around a little bit longer, I think, because she's here for Brady Wynn, too. Item BK4, I move the commission adopt the consent order on Public Service Commission Northern Improvement Company Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15627.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. The next three motions are all dealing with Northern Improvement. In this particular case, on August 7th of last year, the commission received a complaint from MDU alleging a violation by Northern Improvement Company of North Dakota Century Code 4923. And 4923 is not the actual call before you dig portion of it. It's the careful and prudent manner dealing with that appropriate part of North Dakota Code. Northern Improvement is a North Dakota corporation with its main offices in Fargo. Of course, MDU is a company that we regulate with main offices right here in Bismarck. Facts of this particular case are staff concluded on June 17th, Northern provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One Call for work to begin June 19th. The ticket would be good for until July 10th. June 29th, Northern personnel began an excavation, so they called it in. But during the process of actual digging, they hit a 4-inch natural gas main belonging to MDU was damaged by Northern's backhoe, and the amount of the damage was approximately $900. MDU has been reimbursed for the damage. And based on this investigation, staff concluded there was no staff concluded that Northern did not excavate in a careful and prudent manner. Northern got this case, they certainly agreed to it. And in this case, the staff is recommending, and the consent order says that Northern is to pay a fine of $2,900, $2,900 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission to go to the general fund at the end of this. And so, you know, one of the things that we always talk about, call before you dig, we've kind of expanded that message, call before you dig, dig safely, and then remove your flags. Because some people are calling, but you still can't get in there with the backhoe and just rip things up. And we've had hearings, the three of us have had, where you get to that certain hand dig zone, that's what you do. You hand dig. You don't use the backhoe in there and hit things. So I certainly appreciate staff's work on this, and there is no suspending half and half in this one. And one of the things I did work through staff and ask how they got to the $2,900, because I always like to know their rationale and make sure it makes sense before I would agree to a consent order. But in this case, there was $500 for the damages of their first time and $2,400 for the potential severity of it. So there was a definite methodology that our staff continues to use when they recommend fines to us. So in this particular case, I think everything is certainly in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Item BK5. I move the commission adopt the consent order of Public Service Commission Northern Improvement Company Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU15628.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In August of last year, the commission received a one-call complaint from MDU alleging a violation by Northern Improvement Company of the North Dakota Century Code dealing with careful and prudent. Very similar to the facts of the last case, the company did call in a one-call ticket June 17th in the area of Dickinson. I don't know if I said Dickinson last time, but this case and the last case were dealing in the area of 40th Street East and 4th Avenue East in Dickinson. The company called in a ticket. They were doing the work in the right time frame. But in this particular case, staff concluded that a 4-inch natural gas main was damaged during the excavation by Northern Improvements bulldozer, and the amount of the damage was approximately $2,000. The operator has been reimbursed. This damage occurred 15 feet away from the incident earlier that same day where Northern damaged the same natural gas line with a backhoe. So this consent order also fines the company $2,900. The staff did not recommend a escalator in this case because both happened in the same time frame, and we've had cases where we've dealt with that, and I think it makes sense what they have in the consent order here. Also dealing with $500 of damage, $2,400 in severity, and the company has reimbursed MDU the cost of the damages. So appreciate our staff's tenacity in this. And I also know that Northern Improvement has contacted our office and asked where do they go for training. And we hooked them up with Ryan Schmaltz from One Call as well as Kevin Archer from Common Ground Alliance. But I will be calling them after this cases are decided and talking to their boss over there and saying, you mean to tell me that you've been operating this long without understanding what Common Ground Alliance is? And what, I mean, I just, this is a big company. And the fact that they have not been involved in some of these groups, it still stuns me. So we've done numerous digger dinners in Fargo. But back to your point, Commissioner Fedorchik, we just got to keep staying in the fight. And one of the things that I think by us, you know, the staff goes through, they recommend the prima facie, we make a decision, they get held accountable, they get fined. I think we have Northern Improvement's attention on this on these cases.
What about through the AGC? I mean, they do a ton of stuff. I would think that.
Yes, they probably belong to that group.
I would think so.
I suspect they belong to that group, mm-hmm. but the level of participation they have with Common Ground Alliance, they didn't know anything about that setup that took place in Minot. And then I think that they were mailed, so they were notified of it. So that's mm-hmm. some of the, we've just got to, you know, do our job with the enforcement, but help them get to the right places so they did the training they needed mm-hmm. to do.
Here we have a motion and second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, I intend to support this. I'm glad that as much work as this company does around the state that we've gotten their attention and that they're going to seek the training. My question, though, has to do with whatever precedent this sets. And in a case like this, I have a hard time envisioning that every single employee on a construction crew is expected to know all the procedures, but that it would be the supervisors who would have that expectation for. And so in this case, where these happen, how many feet apart? Like 30 feet or something?
It was 15 or something.
Same day. Did one person fail to do things right, and two different operators hit the same pipe, and so we're, in a way, this almost seems like the same case to me, just that it was struck by two different operators, just as if they were shoveling and both hit the same pipe. I'm not sure that this should be two cases.
Well, and that's certainly a choice that I guess to make, but the company MDU filed two different complaints. Our staff acted on those complaints. Staff worked with Northern Improvement about what their thought was. They agreed to consent order, took responsibility for the operation of their employees, and I think these fines today are certainly appropriate. If they would have requested to do a hearing, we would have done a hearing.
Since they agree, I'm not going to oppose the consent order, but I do think it's something for staff to and us to contemplate. When multiple things happen as part of the same operation and the responsibility would fall on the same person, when do we divide those and when does it all become the same thing? I don't know the answer to it, though.
You bring up a good point about the, you know, distinction between the two cases. The time that it occurred is probably the key piece that I'm not sure we know, but the fact that the companies agreed to it, on the consent order, I'm supporting it too. And I think that you could almost look at it the opposite of how you're looking at it too, in that they struck one and then in that same area still weren't using care, and they should have been hand digging at that point because they had struck one earlier and knew that this was an area that required it. So you know, I think that that's a concern as well.
And this may not be the best parallel, but I remember talking to staff attorneys different times. If I drive through 8 stoplights on the way downtown, they're going to find me 8 different times potentially. I mean, so there's different ways to look at it. But I think that the fact that, to what Julie said, that they did it and they did it again shortly, I have no sympathy for them in this particular case. And there's even one more coming.
Gas lines.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. And finally, the last of these type of motions, item BK6. I move the commission adopt the consent order on Public Service Commission Northern Improvement Company Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU15629.
Second.
A little bit later, no, the same date, August 7th of 2015, the commission received a one-call complaint from MDU alleging a violation by Northern Improvement of not following the part of North Dakota's called for a dig century code and being careful and prudent. We've talked about Northern Fargo Company. We know who MDU is. And in this particular case, it was Northern called in a ticket July 8th for a notice for digging to begin later on, 2 days later. In this case, the ticket was good through July 31st. The company started digging July 13th. It was in a different area this time. It was 40th Street East, but 2nd Avenue East, so a different area, a little bit different time frame. But in this particular case, it's the same kind of facts where staff concluded that both a 2-inch line and a 4-inch natural gas line of MDUs were hit by Northern's backhoe. The operator has been reimbursed for the damages of the $3,500. In this case, staff in the consent order talk about a $2,000 fine, $500 for damages, and $1,500 for severity because it was a smaller line that was hit, a 2-inch line and a 4-inch line. So there is, once again, the rationale. You know, this is where these three things did happen, to your point, Commissioner Crispin, in a very short period of time. But I know that their staff has been heavily involved in discussion with Northern Improvement. And as these things played out over the last year, I don't think it was until staff actually filed the prima facie that we got their attention. And then once we filed the prima facie and said, okay, you either work this out with us or it's going to a hearing, that's when they basically said, yep, okay. So I'm hopeful that they have changed their behavior since this period of time, and I know that, like I said in previous motions, we certainly have Northern Improvement's attention based on how this all played out.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will add, in contrast to what I said about the previous case, this one, even though it's a much smaller pipeline, so you know one could say it's minimal, but what I think is so egregious about this one is it appears to be just 3 weeks later and maybe 2 blocks away. And the previous incident where they knew darn well someone had to come in and repair that line, regardless what they thought of safety, every time that happens, it adds to the cost for consumers and such. And only a few weeks later, there still wasn't due care shown. And so this one was the one that I found the most egregious.
Is there any further discussion? Let's see, none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. That concludes these parts of my agenda. Just a couple comments about some context. You know, today's motions were fines levied of $9,100. And actually today is a benchmark, and it's not a benchmark that I'm going to say I'm excited about, because our goal here is not necessarily to fine people. Our goal is compliance and have the right things going on out there. But with today's total of actions, this is over our 70th action since we started in 2009, and this brings the totals of fines that we've levied over $100,000. We're right now at $109,500 of fines the commission has levied since we started this in 2009. So it's a benchmark of over-levying over $100,000 in fines, but I still go back to our goal is not to fine. Our goal is compliance, and we're going to keep doing what we've always done. And I do think that it's really, you can kind of sense out there that the tolerance by some of these companies that are doing it right is getting less for those companies that don't. And so policing your own is one of the things that I think is very important. So I look forward to keep doing our job, but to help the education out there.
There's 5 regular agenda items, and then, as you mentioned,
I have one left.
There's 4 consent items on prima facie case, all related to this issue. So it's even beyond what we're seeing on the regular agenda.
So call for you dig. Dig safely. Remove your flags. All right. Are we all square with our votes, Daryl? I forgot. Did we vote on that?
We already did.
Okay. Item BK3, last but not least. Quite a lengthy motion. I'll go through it, and then I'll explain it. Item BK3, I move the commission deem complete the application for certificate of site compatibility, conditioned by filing by the applicant at least 30 days prior to the public hearing, in this case, the following. One, a final site plan with maps and tables showing distances from the nearest turbine to each occupied residence and indicating whether the property owner is participating or not participating in the project. Two, final noise and shadow flicker studies. Three, wetland delineation report. Four, bat and whooping crane habitat assessment studies. Five, a bat acoustic study. Six, an avion and grouse select field inventory. And seven, an eagle use survey. I further move the commission issue a notice of filing and public hearing in Brady Wind 2, Brady 2 Wind Energy Center, Hedinger and Stark siting application, case number PU1642.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. I'll just go through the specifics of just the hearing, and I'll go back to the motion. Public hearing for this case is scheduled to begin June 7th at 9 a.m. Mountain Time, 10 a.m. Central Time, at Memorial Hall, 925 Main Street, New England, North Dakota. This particular case, Brady 2, the site will be up to 150 megawatts of wind of up to 72 individual turbines. Estimated cost of this project is $243 million. While it's not part of our decision process, I do know that Basin Electric has a power purchase agreement to purchase the power in Brady 2. And so I look forward, the actual site itself, the hearing is in New England. A few miles north, straddling Highway 22, is the basic project area. The northern part of the project area is in the southern part of Stark County, and then the rest of it is in Hedinger County. So the commission just finished Brady 1 wind hearing, 15 hours. That is still in front of us for deliberation. This is the Brady 2, so we're looking forward to a good, robust hearing on that. Now I'll go back to the additions in what were put in the motion. Since I've been here, and there was a couple wind farms that were cited before I got here, but not too many. The commission, I think, continues to find that right balance of making sure what information we have before the hearings and what information may come in afterwards. And a good example for me has always been that we want to have the final turbine locations before the hearing. Some of those field studies, the bugs and bunny stuff I call it, may not be final until well after the hearing, but I've always felt that as long as they have that information at the hearing, the initial studies, we can kind of work through it. But one of the things that has kind of come out in the last few hearings where the public has been very concerned about, and us too, I believe, about, you know, what is the impact of participating landowners, non-participating landowners, what are the noise and studies, shadow flicker studies, some of those things. In the past, we've always wanted it before the hearing, but we'd set a guideline of about 10 days for final turbine locations. Based on the hearings that we're having recently, I don't think 10 days is enough. We did the Oliver 3 motion here, I think, last meeting, and we asked for final turbine locations 30 days prior, which I think is certainly appropriate. And after that meeting, the three of us had a little work session. We talked about what is it that we would all think we would want as final before the hearings take place. And this is kind of the list for this particular wind farm that I think makes sense. They get the final site plan, you know, the noise studies. We talked about some of the environmental things. And so the question might come, how can you say deeming the application complete still not having these final studies? Well, when you go through it, we've received preliminary studies in a lot of these things. They have preliminary tower locations. They're just not finalized quite yet because they might be working with one or two landowners. They have their desktop studies complete for the environmental things. So really, the staff has, I think, gone through and done a nice job of highlighting these are, we want the final studies, but it wasn't like we don't have any information on all these things. We have the preliminary files on the site plan as well as where it's from occupied residents and non-occupied. We have preliminary noise and shadow flicker studies. We have desktop studies on the wetlands and other things. So we have enough information to deem this complete based on the study. Staff recommends that. I've reviewed it all with them, and it certainly makes good sense. But before we have the hearing, these studies need to be final 30 days. This information needs to be final 30 days. So any member from the public or other groups that wants to review this prior to the hearing has the opportunity to do so. And that's one of the things that in previous cases where even though the information may have been available 10 days prior, 10 days, is that really enough? You know, maybe at the time it was in North Dakota, but now I think 30 days certainly seems appropriate. So kind of a long explanation, but this is, once again, I would say a little shift in how we're doing business, and I think it makes sense. This is the how I think it should be for this particular wind farm. This doesn't mean that every wind farm going forward will be like this, but I think this is a basis that we may adjust going forward, and it may be like this in all the cases. We'll just have to see. For this case, I think it's appropriate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a couple thoughts. You mentioned in your comments that some of these things are ongoing, like the environmental studies. And so I think I heard you just to say that the studies that they're filing, even when it comes to the eagle use, bat acoustic, bat and whooping crane wetland delineation, they're updated to what they have now. But they'll be ongoing, too, so those might not be final studies.
That was one of the questions I asked staff. I said, let's be careful here about some of these environmental studies because, as we talked in our work session, I said, if it's going to be ongoing studies, then I think that we should acknowledge that and not put them as a condition for that.
Yeah.
But what staff has been told from the company and recommended to me that the company says they will have all these finalized before the hearing, which is good.
Okay.
But that's where to your point about going forward, if a company is not able, I shouldn't say if a company, if the environmental attributes of a study do not allow a conclusion, I may not ask for a bad acoustic study to be final before the hearing because that may be something ongoing that we would need before a final decision is made or maybe be a condition of it. But it's one of those things that I think there's some flexibility on. Okay. I will say from my viewpoint, the first couple of final site plans showing distances from occupied and non-occupied residents, final noise and shadow flickers, to me, those are absolute must-haves. The other ones in this case, I think the company says they'll have them done. It's appropriate to put them in the order. But those I would certainly consider not having those in other cases where the facts of the environmental studies might be different. But the first two I'm pretty set in on.
I like the 30 days because it gives the public a lot of time to look at it, ample time. It also provides more certainty to the companies that, you know, in the last case we had it all set up and it was real shortly before the hearing that the interveners came and asked for more time and then that ended up, you know, throwing the company off. So this provides more certainty for the company as well and doesn't really create a setup where somebody can come in and say that they haven't had enough time to look at the information that's been filed because 30 days should be ample time for any analysis of this information.
And I would add for people who might be listening who have impact out there and, you know, don't work in this industry regularly, even with the site plan, I think this is very good improvement over the approvals that we've given in the past. But even the turbine locations, I think it's vital that we get those out early so people can look at them. It's also important for people to understand there any large projects that we do that cover vast amounts of acreage, whether it's transmission lines or wind farms or things like that, they will run into things and seek adjustments along the way. And, you know, small and reasonable adjustments will, you know, most likely be approved. And so it's also not that 30 days before they lay those out and then nothing can ever change again either. It ought to be realistic and the changes ought to be, you know, minimal after that so people can really gauge what they're looking at and form opinions around that information. But they should also understand that adjustments will probably be forthcoming.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
See, I did have one question on that. Not that it would change my vote, but why are we starting at 10 instead of 9?
We have to drive. We're driving out there,
yeah.
And so giving our staff time to come in and drive out there.
And it is 9 to them.
Right, but o'clock. The last time we started at 8 and we went until 11:30.
Well, it's
so.
Just two hours of drive time.
And we drove the last time, too. I don't know.
I'm okay with
starting
earlier.
We're being optimistic. I'd rather start earlier, and unless you don't think that it's going to go as long this time.
I'm okay with whatever time we want to start. I think there was a recommendation by staff and company that way everybody can get down there because it's not like you can get into New England easier.
Yeah.
It's easier to get into Dickinson than it was New England. So I guess unless I'm okay with what we have there.
Okay. Well, we can try it, see how it goes.
If we're going to break that record, that way I'm rested up to break the record.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that to your question...
You could call it a two-day hearing, then.
Well, but I think
over
that...
Over midnight.
No, your point, though, is it's good to highlight, though, Commissioner Fedorchuk, because one of the things that... And this is, yes, a little... Lana, shut me up here if I'm going too far down the road, but one of my frustrations about the Brady win, one, was all the information as far as participating, non-participating, some of those things we had to kind of work through with maps during the hearing, which I think extended the time frame. By what we're doing today in this order, we want all this stuff 30 days prior so we can properly review it. We can have all the information. So when we get to the hearing, it doesn't end up being extra 2-3 hours of trying to weed through some of this stuff. We required it well in advance so we can have it as well as the public. So I think it will smooth some of the bumps that maybe we encountered in the first one hearing.
Do we have interveners on this one officially yet? Not yet?
I don't believe so, no.
Because that really was... one of the factors sure. that extended the hearing as well, just the third line of questioning of every witness.
And that's their right, and we support it. But
absolutely. It worked well. It just took a long time.
I am hopeful that this will run a little more smoothly just because what we're asking the front end, and we'll see what the public comments are and other things as it unfolds. But one of the things of giving the 30 days is that if someone comes in here with 3 days before the hearing and says they don't have adequate time to review the information, I perhaps would look at it differently than I did before because this has a 30-day ticker on the front. Not prejudging, Alana. I'm just saying, hypothetically. So.
All right. So we had already voted on that. Okay, so that concludes our regular agenda. We'll open up for questions here shortly. Just highlight a couple things. We're down at Lake Night today and tomorrow. End of this month, we have a hearing with Otter Tail on some renewable resource cost recoveries. We have our rail safety, no, it's not actually written right, but it's a rail annual meeting with stakeholders on service. So it should be rail service annual meeting with stakeholders. A hearing in Kildare and Oliver Wind. So we... a couple pipelines and wind cases still forthcoming. Okay, we'll open up for any questions.
About Brady Wind, there's no power line associated with that or power, that type of infrastructure?
My understanding is the 10-mile line that's in front of us for Brady 1 will probably be used for Brady 2.
Okay. So they're adjacent?
Yes.
And are you a fan of Looney Tunes cartoons?
Absolutely.
Thoughts of the Bugs and Bunny.
Yes. It's one of my favorite, Dave.
Yes, yes. But Northern Improvement, that seems to be maybe the largest company that has run afoul of the Call Before You Dig law. Would that be a fair assessment?
You know, I don't know that it's hard to measure that, Dave, because we have had other cases in the past. I mean, it's certainly one of the ones that I know the best. Northern Excavating, of course, we've had in front of us. It might be, Dave. I can do a quick look.
I'm just curious. That's all.
I'll look through here quickly, Dave. But I think that's probably a fair assessment. I don't know the exact size of the company other than they're really big.
Certainly one of the largest.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that would be a fair assessment, Dave, because the rest of them don't seem to be that big at all.
Household names.
Yeah, exactly. Good word.
In the construction of I-94 back in the 60s, you saw Northern Improvement signs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
You're dating yourself, Dave.
Nobody else will.
Dave, I would say that'd be exactly right.
I'm sorry. I used that line a few times. I had to.
Robert Gibbons Sons was another one. That's a household name, if you will. But I would say that what Randy and Julie said is accurate. You're just giddy over the UND victory, aren't you, Dave?
Took me a minute to catch that one. All right. Any other questions?
This is just a simple question. When you say how however many megawatts a wind farm is that per day, or is it?
Ooh, that's not an easy question to answer. It's nameplate capacity of the turbine at an instant in time. And if you've got a second afterwards, we can walk through that if you want. But wind farm calculations vice coal plant calculations, it's based on what the max output is when it's producing. I don't know if there's a better way.
It's a total potential. But because the wind doesn't always blow, you can't really quantify how much it's going to be in any given day. Okay. But that's the maximum amount that if all of them are spinning, it can produce at any time.
And there's no transmission congestion. Right?
So like you guys say, up to however many megawatts, it's basically just like an estimate of how much it could produce.
Right.
But with all the other factors.
Not a day.
How much it could produce in a moment.
In a moment.
Yep, any time. Yep. So like a coal plant, if it's 700 megawatts, they can produce that all the time based on just having it running at full capacity. But a wind farm, you don't really know because the wind, it just depends on the wind speed and it fluctuates. So that's the maximum it could produce.
And if somebody sees a whooping crane.
Yes. Okay. Well, very good. We will.
Should we keep plowing through since we need to?
Yeah,
get
we probably should so we can go to the Lignite Council meeting.
That's okay.
If we just take a minute, if people want to leave, that they're not feeling like they're disrupting,
but
you're welcome to stay.
We have to sign too. Let's just break for 5 minutes, sign, and then we can get back and finish the admin agenda. Thank you.